from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, with Twitter's popularity among journalists, pop stars, and presidential candidates, you'd think the social media platform would be alive and well. But a recent Bloomberg report says the San Francisco-based company is preparing to lay off several hundred workers as soon as this week. The news comes after Twitter failed to find a buyer and as it prepares to release its quarterly earnings. What's going on at Twitter, which has more than 300 million users? We talk about the future of the influential company next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Twitter has been struggling. The platform that's been instrumental to news gathering, prompting dialogue and everything from debates to talk shows, and shaping the images of celebrities, has struggled to make a profit, grow its number of users, and keep harassment on the platform at bay. Now there's word that the 10-year-old company plans to lay off hundreds of workers again. Is the grand experiment of a free and open platform where anyone can communicate in 140 characters or less failing? We dig into what's happening at the influential San Francisco company and what its future might be in this hour of Forum. And joining me for this hour is Sarah Friar. She is a tech blogger at Bloomberg News. Good morning, Sarah Friar.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We're also joined by Alex Kantrowitz. He is senior technology reporter with BuzzFeed News. Good morning, Alex Kantrowitz.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Sarah Friar, I want to start with you because you broke the news about the layoffs. We're hearing that it could be some 300 people.
Right. It might be about the same percentage they laid off as last time. Remember, when Jack Dorsey took over as CEO of Twitter, he had to make some cuts right away to try to get people focused. Twitter's long been criticized for having just too many people working on one thing. And he wanted to get people to really focus on quick execution.
And how many people work at Twitter?
It's about 3,600.
And is that number pretty set, or do you think it could still change before the announcement, the official announcement?
I think it could get bigger or smaller depending on—at the time we reported it, things were still in flux, but I do expect them to announce it this week.
And Sarah, you feel like this is a way to control spending— because Twitter has been struggling with its profits.
Absolutely. If you look at what analysts are expecting for Twitter's profitability, they're not really expecting it to be profitable on a quarterly basis until maybe sometime in 2018, not on a yearly basis until after that. And so, yeah, that's a big problem for Twitter or for anyone who might acquire it down the road. There's also the issue of stock compensation for all of those employees. It's a stock drops in value, it gets a lot more expensive.
And so, Alex Kantrowitz, can we read anything into the fact that they are making this announcement right at the time that they're also planning to give their earnings report? I've also heard that they changed the timing of this from the afternoon to the morning. Is there anything we can read into that tomorrow? This is the earnings report tomorrow.
I think it's hard to read into it too much. And tomorrow's a very busy day, and there's a lot of things happening in the tech world. So they may just have wanted to get a jump on all the announcements. We'll just have to wait and see for tomorrow what's going to actually happen.
It feels like everything we're hearing about Twitter is very, you know, doomsday. It's kind of dark and gloomy. And there is a lot of criticism of the company right now. I was reading a Vanity Fair panel that was talking about the fact that Twitter is, you know, too expensive, that its costs are way too high, that it puts way too many employees, as Sarah Friar was saying, to do not a terribly large number of things for the company, and that it struggles with its vision for itself. Would you say that those are the key issues facing the company right now?
I love all this doomsday talk because I think it's so misguided. And in fact, I think it's pretty great that you kicked off your comments today saying, hey, is this grand experiment over? What we're looking at right now is this really interesting contrast between what may be the worst moment in Twitter's history for its business. It reportedly tried to sell itself and couldn't. There are layoffs that are coming, according to Sarah's report. We don't think that it's doing really well in terms of its financial performance. But then look at the other side. This past 3 months were the best months that Twitter's product has had, perhaps in its history. It's become a focal point for the United States presidential election. It's the number one place that you could go to follow updates of the invasion of Mosul and the fallout of Brexit. I mean, right now, you're looking at Twitter's product shining, with an obvious caveat, which I think we'll get to later, in terms of its inability to curb harassment. But the product is doing so well. And it's very interesting to see this happening while the business is tanking. And it leads me to question, well, why do we care so much about the business? This thing is having a tremendous influence on the way that we think about things in the world. And we spend all this time saying, oh, Twitter's done, Twitter's dead, the business is impossible to recover. The main thing Twitter needs to do is keep that side up. And as long as it does that, I think it's going to be in great shape.
Sarah Friar, Alex Kantrowitz is putting a lot out here in terms of whether or not we should be so concerned about the business side of things and whether all of this doomsday talk is misguided. Do you agree?
I think there has always been doomsday talk about Twitter. It's just the way the service has been run over its history. When Twitter just started, they couldn't keep the site up. And people kept saying, how could you ever have a successful company if you can't keep the site up? You know, once they had a sizable user base, then everyone started saying, but you can never make money off that user base. Once they started making money off that user base, the user base started to slow in growth. And people started saying, well, if you can't grow your user base, how are you going to keep making money? And that's the point we're at now. So Twitter has weathered a lot of storms. Like Alex said, they are at the center of the discussion of, you know, any political, any celebrity, any sports event. But if you're a business, you have to make money. And they don't.
Well, I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation because I know we have a lot of Twitter users out there, considering the fact that a lot of them comment to us through it, and also because it is a platform that a lot of people either love or hate. They can have very strong feelings about it. We want to hear from you. Do you love this platform? What do you use it for? Or do you find it hard to use, as some have suggested has been one of Twitter's problems? How would you improve it if you could? We also would love to invite current and former Twitter employees to join the conversation and weigh in on what we're talking about. The number is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. You can post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can post them on Facebook. And of course, you can post them on Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. And we're talking with Sarah Friar, tech reporter at Bloomberg News, and Alex Kantrowitz, a senior technology reporter with BuzzFeed News. Alex Kantrowitz, you started talking about this, but one of its significant challenges, even if, we should keep the doomsday talk in context, right, is that it has such a hard time dealing with online harassment. And it's been rumored that that was part of what made it unappealing to early suitors. What, first of all, could you just lay out what some of the problems have been in terms of online harassment, racism on the site, anti-Semitism on the site as well, and why it's been so challenging to deal with it?
Okay, let's go one by one. So in terms of why harassment is a problem, one of the great things about Twitter is anybody on Twitter can talk to anyone. I can get into Barack Obama's mentions by at mentioning him. And if he's got the device in his hand and he's looking into his mentions, there's a good chance he can see it. So it's flattening communication in a way that other platforms like email just simply can't do right now. The flip side of that is anybody with a bad message to send can get it in front of anyone else. And so if you have coordinated groups that are going out and saying we disagree with this person's vantage point or we simply don't like them because of who they are and where they came from, it's very easy for them to reach these people. So it's a good and a bad – I mean, it's the good and the bad of Twitter, right? Ideas move very fast and they're able to spread and reach lots of different people in a way that they couldn't before, like those walls are brought down. And then on the other hand, you see that really negative things can get across to people. And it's driven a lot of people to curb their use. I mean, if you use Twitter enough and you have enough people that are paying attention to what you write, you will get harassed. It's almost like a given. Now, let's go to why Twitter hasn't been able to curb this. If Twitter is going to rein in harassment, it's going to have to put in some elements in place on its platform that's going to basically hamper a little bit of that ability to communicate with anyone. It has to put walls up. And what's great about its platform is that it brings walls down. So this is very, very difficult for this company to figure out. Now, look, I think there's a very straightforward way for it to solve the problem. And I think that what we see right now in social media is a lot of companies are copying each other, right? So it's Instagram just copied Snapchat in terms of bringing stories in. I think Twitter should copy Instagram. And what Instagram did was it created these filters. It has a custom filter, a custom keyword filter, and then a default keyword filter, where basically it provides like a list of many, many words that you probably don't want to see in your mentions. And it says if you turn the – or in your comments. And it says if you turn this keyword filter on, you won't see comments with those words. Now, what's preventing Twitter from releasing something like that? Where if I basically go into that platform and say, you know, I don't want to see word A, B, and C, that if somebody tries to tell me, you know, hey, Alex, we should do the final solution again, and I have final solution in my keyword filter, I don't have to see that. And that should be a relatively simple fix. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why Twitter hasn't implemented that one.
Sarah Farr, do you agree that this would be the fix? And why wouldn't Twitter implement it if it's relatively simple, as Alex Kantrowitz says?
Well, this is actually something that – this kind of fix is actually something that we reported this fall that they are actually – they've been working on for months. The thing about internally at Twitter is sometimes they debate things and they think about them and they think very heavily about how this is going to affect the user base and how this is going to affect people's ability to say anything to anyone, which as Alex mentioned, is like one of the great things about the service. And so I don't know why we haven't seen them release that yet, but what I do know is that they have a task force of outside firms, you know, groups that work to help you know, people who get bullied or sexually harassed or attacked in a racist or anti-Semitic way. And they're working with these groups and trying to figure out what will be possible. But we just really haven't seen the update that's going to help, despite all the talk, despite all of Dorsey saying, the CEO, Jack Dorsey, saying that he prioritizes fixing the safety issue on the platform.
Is the dirty little secret that if you did fix all of that, you could lose users and a significant number, and maybe that would certainly not help with the complaints about stagnant user growth among investors?
That's totally possible. And it's also that this is something that they haven't really invested a lot in the past. They don't really have a dedicated team that's large and focused on this. At least in the past, they have sort of thought that this is something that on the platform people will kind of figure out amongst themselves. If somebody says something mean to somebody else, then, you know, somebody else can come in and say, hey, that's mean, don't say that. And the forum sort of self-regulates. But in the past, what that has caused is just trolls to gang up on somebody and make whatever's happening a lot worse instead of making it better.
Right. And in Twitter's defense, I mean, it did, I believe, try or permanently banned the right-wing commentator who was attacking comedian Leslie Jones, right, who was the star of Ghostbusters. And it has tried to, my understanding, cut several ISIS-related accounts, though it's very hard. Those things pop up all the time. It's interesting you're talking about also how things work at Twitter, where things are discussed and talked about and thought through for a long time. We're actually joined on the line now by a former employee of Twitter. Vivian Schiller was an advisor to news organizations, tech companies, for Twitter. And Vivian Schiller, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Nice to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Actually, maybe you could explain a little bit better what specifically your role was at Twitter.
Right. Yeah, I was the global chair of news for Twitter. I was a full-time employee. I think what you were referencing to being an advisor, that's what I'm doing today. But yes, I worked at Twitter. And my job was to represent Twitter to news organizations and journalists, help them use Twitter to do their job, to both for news gathering as well as distributing news, engaging with consumers, and also to represent the needs of news organizations and journalists back to Twitter management in terms of how strategy and product developed.
And you've, had some concerns about all the complaints about Twitter not handling abuse on the site. You know, questioning really how easy is it to deal with 500 million tweets that are going across the system on a daily basis?
That's right. It's incredibly difficult. It would be wrong to suggest that, you know, Twitter isn't paying attention to these issues. There's no question they are. It's really complicated because, like you say, 500 million tweets a day, grappling with varying definitions of what abuse are, and also trying to maintain what is sort of the core to the to Twitter's ethos, which is, you know, famously was quoted the former general counsel as, you know, the free speech wing of the free speech party. Having said that, there's no question that solutions have been long, long coming. And if anything, Twitter's a very thoughtful organization, but it's sort of thoughtful to a fault. And that's really the best explanation I could have for why a solution has been, or a satisfying solution has been, very slow.
Do you agree with or believe some of the rumors that companies like Salesforce and Disney basically decided to abandon its interest in acquiring the company because of these issues, because it could be kind of a dark and nasty place?
I've read that speculation. I have no, you know, inside knowledge inside those organizations to know if that's true, but it certainly wouldn't be surprising. It would not be the least bit surprising, mm-hmm, if a company that was interested in potentially acquiring Twitter might be spooked by that. I think if we've seen nothing in this election year, we've seen heightened awareness of issues around abuse, trolls, and it's pretty toxic. And I would think a lot of organizations and brands don't want to be associated with that.
The doom and gloom, right, that we were talking about earlier, it's lost a lot of wooers. It can be an ugly place for racism and, you know, misogyny and anti-Semitism to rear its head. Amid all that, you feel like the value of the company and what it really does has gotten lost in the conversation. As someone who's worked at the company, what is it that you want to say about that?
Well, I do. What is getting lost is the incredible impact and the important place that I think Twitter occupies now in terms of global public discourse. I am not in the least bit trying to minimize the issues around abuse. That is a very serious issue. It's a toxic issue. It's disturbing. It's upsetting. All of those things are true. At the same time, I think it's important, and the issues around the company and changes in management and the stock price have all sort of overshadowed the fact that Twitter, I think, in many ways is more relevant than ever. I mean, it has been absolutely central to the current U.S. presidential campaign. It has been central to the discovery of news for people in areas where free speech is either suppressed or not readily available in terms of the ability to communicate, to get the word out from all over the world and have that be spread. And I think it would be a shame, it would be actually devastating, I think, in many ways, if in all of this, you know, if Twitter shrinks to the point or is acquired by an organization that shuts down elements of that. I think that would be a huge loss globally to public discourse.
Well, I think Pete would agree with you. He tweets. How else can you talk to anyone in the world you admire or respect? Authors, scientists, journalists, leaders, instantly. But Eden writes, does the world need to know what I'm thinking all the time? I think it's a good tool for journalists, etc., but it's just a thought bubble for everyone else. And Edward tweets, yay, we need some of these other companies to implode too. Can you tweet bubble? And let's go to Scott in San Francisco. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
Probably the only way that I've used Twitter over the past few years is just to basically use it as an absorbing means for, you know, news sources, like seeing what NASA's doing with the Curiosity rover and stuff like that. But I wanted to get the panel's take on the idea of anonymity as it plays into this conversation, because one of the things that I've always seen as a problem, especially with any form of kind of internet communication, whether it's, you know, a Reddit thread or, you know, a YouTube comment section, is that people are really willing to say whatever they want to, regardless of consequence, when they can sit behind an avatar on, you know, YouTube or, you know, some form of profile that basically keeps, you know, an identity away from the people that they are either harassing or belittling or, you know, interacting with in some way, shape, or form. So I'm curious if anonymity plays in at all to, you know, a means by which to fix this, if it's, you know, obviously a very difficult thing to try to implement, but just on a theoretical level.
Sarah Fryer, do you want to take that?
I don't think that Twitter is ever going to be a place where everyone has their real names because of the history. I mean, this is the place where the Arab Spring kicked off in 2010, and this is where, you know, revolutions have been talked about, the Black Lives Matter movement. And sometimes when you're in a position of needing to say what you think, but your government, you know, will prosecute you for it, or people will think badly of you for it, people want to go behind a pseudonym. And you are absolutely right that that has caused a lot of the issues with harassment on the platform. Even I have had people who I've blocked and they come back with a different name, a different fake name, and continue to try to attack. But I think that because of the nature of what Twitter is and what people think the most important use is for Twitter, I don't think that we'll ever see that go away. Now, I do think that they are making more of an effort to get people verified. That's like the blue check mark that you get by your name if you are who you say you are. So they know, for example, that if my account tweets that is Sarah Fryer, they've verified that. But I think that, yeah, that's an issue. They're going to have to try to solve this harassment and abuse issue without taking away the anonymity on the platform.
Scott, thanks for the question. I want to go to Ryan in San Francisco. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just going to ask a question or a comment about, you know, the filters and the free speech issues. Also, the banning of, I think it was Milo Yiannopoulos is the name of the right-wing guy. But well, I guess the main concern probably for even Twitter users is that it basically gives Twitter and Jack Dorsey the ability to determine what users can and cannot hear or what they're exposed to. And really, it seems like Twitter has kind of supplanted the town square, excuse me, the town square for information. And so I wonder I think it's the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, and then the California Constitution recognizes an affirmative right to free speech.
Ryan, thanks. Alex Kantrowitz, do you want to comment on that?
Definitely. Well, first of all, let's take the free speech issue off the table because that doesn't apply to private corporations.
Right,
so it's within
company.
Twitter's walls. It can do it at once. And the
Which
question
is also why some people have said, why haven't they done more? But anyway.
Absolutely. And the question is a good one. And the answer that I have is this is why I like the filter option so much. If you put it in the hands of users to decide what words they want to see and what words they don't want to see in their mentions and on their timelines, then, you know, if I don't want to see a word, I can make that determination. Put it in the hands of the users and not in the hands of Jack Dorsey. I think that's the way to go.
We're talking about the challenges Twitter's facing and what it could mean for the future of the company with Alex Kantrowitz, senior technology reporter with BuzzFeed News, Sarah Fryer, a tech reporter at Bloomberg News, and Vivian Schiller, who is a former head of global news at Twitter and is now an advisor to news organizations, tech companies, and other brands. We'll have more after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim, is sitting in for Michael Krasny. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. We're talking about Twitter, which has been struggling. The platform that has been so instrumental to news gathering and prompting dialogue has struggled to make a profit and grow its number of users and to keep harassment on the platform at bay. And now it's preparing to lay off several hundred workers as soon as this week. We're talking with Sarah Fryer from Bloomberg News, Alex Kantrowitz with BuzzFeed News, and Vivian Schiller, who was the former head of global news at Twitter and now is an advisor to news organizations and tech companies. And we're talking with you about your thoughts. What do you think about the platform? How do you use it? How would you improve it? Are you worried that it might go away? What would you do to try to keep it around? The number is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Post them on Facebook or on Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. And Bob says, I love Twitter. Their biggest problem is that they don't cater well to the general public who find it confusing to use. Sarah Fryer, is this a core problem with Twitter?
That is absolutely a core problem with Twitter. When you make an account for Twitter, you then have to decide who you're going to follow. By deciding who to follow, you have to decide who you think is interesting before you've really seen what it feels like to use Twitter and know about it. What Twitter's doing now is they're trying to get people to use Twitter in a different way. They've done a lot of live streaming deals with the NFL, for example, and other sports organizations, and they've been live streaming the presidential debates. And what they're hoping to do with this is give users another entry point into the service. So then you don't actually have to make an account. You can just go there to watch the football game. And so that is a huge initiative for them to try to broaden their audience and maybe get advertising revenue from a different source. Jury's out on whether it's going to work. Maybe they'll have some commentary on Thursday about whether it does. But absolutely, the user issue is directly tied to how easy it is or hard it is to use the product.
Actually, that is related to Ben's question, which is how come Twitter isn't taking advantage of ad revenue like Facebook or Snapchat? I mean, like most social media platforms, right? They make their money by selling ads, and you see the ads when you're going through the feeds. But how much of a challenge is that, Vivian Schiller, at Twitter in terms of, you know, attracting sponsors, attracting ads?
Well, Twitter absolutely does sell ads, and you see them in your feed, and they've experimented over the years with different sort of ad products and ad formats. And but it just, you know, one of the issues that Twitter has had in terms of monetizing its service is the fact that the growth has slowed. The 500 million tweets a day figure has been pretty static for the last, gosh, I think about 4 years, And monthly active users, which is the statistic that most people pay attention to, again, has been pretty flat at just over 300 million. Those are still pretty staggering numbers. But on the contrary, it's sort of because other social platforms, other platforms like Facebook and Snapchat have been growing so quickly, Twitter's sort of stagnant growth has, in a way, taken a little bit of the bloom off the rose and made it less of a hot property for both, you know, advertisers and frankly, for Wall Street.
Right. Facebook has nearly 2 billion users. We hear a lot, Vivian Schiller, about this distinction or this question of whether or not Twitter needs to define itself as a tech company or a media company. Can you talk about what those distinctions are and why that's important?
Yeah, there's a lot of chatter about this. I mean, it's kind of an artificial construct. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. It certainly doesn't matter to users. A lot of the reason why there's chatter about this has more to do with Wall Street than anything else, which is tech company valuations are so much higher than media company valuations. And if you want to be attractive to Wall Street, you would rather be defined as a tech company rather than a media company. But beyond that, you know, the definitions of media companies are it's pretty academic. I mean, to some people, the definition is if you sell advertising against content, you are a media company. By that definition, you know, Snapchat and Facebook are media companies too. Others define it as, are you creating original content in-house? By that definition, Twitter is not a media company. But again, it doesn't really matter. I mean, Twitter is a unique animal and serves a unique purpose. So I don't pay much attention to those definitions.
Well, Vivian Schiller, I want to thank you for joining us. I know we need to let you go, but it's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. Thanks. It's been great to be with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Sarah Fryer, I do want to jump off a little bit about what Vivian Schiller was saying, because the argument is that other companies have been, even though Facebook could arguably be a media company too, based on the definition that Vivian Schiller just gave us, that they've done better with dealing with occupying, you know, multiple roles.
I think Facebook is scared of being identified as a media company, because if they're a media company, then they're responsible a little bit more for the editorial decisions they make over what content to leave up and take down, which has been a whole different topic we could talk about for another hour. In Twitter's case, I think that they actually do want to be seen a little bit more as still a technology company, but as a media company as well, because, you know, if you saw this year, they changed where they list their app on the Apple App Store. Now they're in the news category. They want people to think of them as a place where they can consume not just post, right? This goes back to the user question we were talking about before. If people think that Twitter, they can only use Twitter if they're a journalist or a celebrity or a politician, then your user base is limited to the people who have something to say. What they're trying to say now is like, hey, even if you don't have something to say, there's a lot of great content here that we want you to come in and take a look at.
And do you think, Alex Kantrowitz, that this is a successful strategy, a good way to go for them?
I mean, I think that this whole debate over whether they're a media company is one of the most pointless debates that we've seen in tech in a long time.
So you're echoing Vivian Schill that it's sort of a false dichotomy.
Yeah, I mean, look, like they're not a content company. They're not Viacom. They don't pay for shows and then air them. They're not a pure technology. They're not a company. They're not Oracle, creates a database and then sells it to people on a subscription basis. They're sort of in the middle. Right, they have technology, clear technology. They have a lot of engineers, and they have, you know, actually Twitter does produce its own content. So I'm going to dispute what Vivian said. They do have their own shows that they're airing right within their platform. So it's like not one, not the other, something in the middle.
But do you think, though, as a strategy, it's important for them to define themselves, or you're saying no, just don't do it either way?
Yeah, I don't think it's important for them to define their strategy in that. I mean, right now, my take is Twitter is in a good place. Its product works really well. I mean, you see this. You saw this especially in that weekend after the Trump tape with Billy Bush. That weekend, Twitter was indispensable. Everybody was glued to it to see all the Republicans, whether they were going to support Trump, whether they weren't going to support Trump. So Twitter finds relevance in these moments where people are glued and they want to know what's happening during unfolding news events. It happened during this situation, during the Boston bombing. And that's where Twitter is going to shine. It won't shine in other moments. But it has something that no other company has, which is that ability to give you a live look into what's happening right now.
So then, Sarah Friar, do you think that it should go it alone and not even continue to it's going to do that essentially now because it wasn't able to woo a buyer. But do you think that it's better for it to be an independent company than to be acquired?
Well, look, when the sales talks first started, Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, according to our sources, was actually a little bit resistant to doing it then because he felt like they had all these things we just talked about, like the live video strategy, that you could capitalize on more and be a more attractive company down the road. And they just hadn't shown their benefit yet. But I will say that's been the story with Twitter for ages. They have so much potential. Everyone keeps saying, like, potential, potential, potential. Twitter, there's two ways it can go now. They could get cheaper and eventually a buyer will come in. Or they can turn everything around and be, go on the road to profitability or user growth or something that I'm sure that they hope internally they can achieve. At this point, they're kind of in limbo because they haven't proved the latter and they tried the former and it didn't quite work. And so on Thursday, what I'm really interested in to hear is, will the executives talk about that decision and what they really see as their future?
Hmm. Stacy in San Francisco. Hi, Stacy.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to get, it's a little bit, I'm going back to the lack of control on harassment. My husband and I are not users of Twitter, although I do see a lot of advantages, as you've all mentioned. My husband is in the military, and for other reasons, an account was opened up in his name, and this is recently, so however it was verified was not correct. Ultimately, at the end of the day, because of things that were posted in his name, in his image, he's now on an ISIS death threat list.
Wow.
So, and to add to that, trying to get this off of Twitter, nobody talks to you. You cannot get a person to talk to you. You simply have to keep filling out forms and checking to see if it ever goes off.
Well, Stacey, you bring up a lot of things here, and I'm sorry to hear that happened to you. How easy is it, Sarah Friar, to deal with getting an account removed on Twitter to get customer service support?
It's really hard. You see people every day posting emails they got back from customer service saying, I'm sorry, we reviewed this and we found that it was not against our terms of service, so we're leaving it up. And so in this case, I mean, it's one of those things that people have, many people have had to endure. And, you know, you go to the police and you go to Twitter and you tweet about it, but sometimes nothing happens. And so, I guess the tack that a lot of people who have had this problem have used is just to be really loud about it on Twitter, to mention at Jack. But even then, people haven't seen some progress, and I'm really sorry to hear what happened to her husband.
Yes. Well, I want to thank Stacey for the call and add Peter's comment, which is, I use Twitter constantly for marketing and emergency management for things like fires, floods, earthquakes, etc. But the need for community management on Twitter is huge. It should not be a Darwinian survival of the fittest. And let's go next to Christina in Columbus. Hi, Christina.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Go ahead.
I wanted to share that I think that Twitter is transforming modern medicine in a very positive and powerful way.
How so?
So by breaking all these geographic and political barriers down, we can share cutting-edge information to our partners in the same hospital, to the people across the halls, the people in the other part of the other parts of the world. And what this translates to is being able to improve medicine regardless of barriers. And it's really changing the shape of medicine as I see it.
Well, Christina, thanks for sharing that. Are you a physician?
I am. And I'm also very involved in Twitter as it relates to leadership within medicine. So we have editorial sections for social media in Archives Magazine. It's our major magazine in pathology. We have sections dedicated to research at our major meetings. And all of this activity results in huge numbers. So for example, our USCAP last meeting, we had 27 million tweets over the course of the week. And all that information gets disseminated to people who can't come to our major meetings. So I think it's playing a very important role in how medicine is going, in the direction medicine is heading.
Well, Christina, thanks for the call. And again, if you'd like to call us to talk about the value of Twitter to you or not, give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Tweedledee tweets, what did the laid-off employees do? Doesn't Twitter need even more employees right now to battle troll factories? Alex Kantrowitz, do you want to respond?
No, I don't think it needs any more employees at all. In fact, I think that Twitter could cut itself in half and still be doing a great job. They have right now, according to their website, 3,860 employees. But the site right now does pretty much what it did when the company started 10 years ago, which is that it's this free-flowing stream of updates. So I would say what Twitter can do is just take that bloated employee count, have them work on that keyword filter, and then set them all free and, you know, live a blissful life after that.
You might get a lot of angry tweets from current employees about that, but Camillo tweets, down the line, Twitter should belong to the public as an important forum for discussion free of the restraints of capitalism. And another listener tweets, Twitter provides a community service. Maybe they should become a nonprofit. I kind of see these comments as related. And that has been something NPR reporter Laura Seidel, I know, did a piece about what if Twitter becomes a nonprofit. Sarah Fryer, what do you think about that as an option?
That's a kind of interesting option. I mean, it's something that you see a lot as we've been breaking news on the deals that were considered for Twitter. A lot of people have said, well, why don't the users just buy it out? That's more aspirational than actually possible. I think there would be a lot of issues with actually making that happen. But it's a nice idea, right? Like, people would then be able to say, like, you know, we all own Twitter. It's for all of us. That said, if Twitter were sort of state subsidized, I think that would be a bad idea for the company in terms of its neutrality on these issues, like trying to deal with free speech on the platform and trying to you know, being asked by the U.S. government to take down terrorists and all of that. I mean, it would become a lot more involved in the government side of things.
Potentially, there are lots of different types of models for nonprofits. But Kevin in San Francisco, you have some thoughts. Join us.
Yes, good morning. I've worked on both of the Twitter buildings. I'm a union sprinkler fitter. And this is just from a person on the job site noticing things. we'd go into areas on the weekends that were occupied during the week, therefore having to do the work in those areas on a Saturday. And the excess was unbelievable. And it harkened me back to the dot-com era of the excess. And I see it as a general attitude that says, well, the money may not be here now, but it's coming, and, you know, we're just blowing out the stops. And I just think it's fiscally irresponsible of Twitter. Top shelf booze, you know, all the creature comforts, which is great for the employees, and I'm all for that. But, you know, when is enough?
Well, Kevin, thanks for that thought. How does Twitter compare when it comes to employee perks and the kinds of things that tech companies stereotypically have been known to lavish on folks? Do you want to say something about that, Alex Kantrowitz?
I mean, it's par for the course. I've been in there, and yeah, there's a kitchen. I mean, when you're talking about being a company that's going to be competitive for some of the top talent in Silicon Valley, unfortunately, the environment that's been created right now is you got to go toe for toe with the other tech companies out there. And so that's what Twitter's done. But I think the bigger question is, and we touched on this before, the bigger question is, why does it need all these employees? I mean, if these employees, the service hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm. But do you mean it's, yeah, fairly, it pretty much does one main thing.
That's right. It does one main thing, and it does it exceptionally well. But the service hasn't changed. And it keeps adding employees. You know, right now it's about to reportedly subtract them, which is a good thing. But usually when a company grows or your company invests, it's because it's doing something else. Like, you look at Facebook and you can talk about all the different products that Facebook have made that have been natural to the Facebook environment. It's taken its user network and it's created the number one messaging app in the world, Messenger. And that's sort of natural for Facebook. But can Twitter create a successful messaging app with what happens in the direct messages? You know, probably not. It works really well on the platform, but it doesn't have that graph like Facebook does. Are the costs excessive? Sure, but I don't think the main problem are the perks. I think the main problem is the headcount.
Wanda writes, I'm a hairstylist, and I used to love Twitter for promoting my hair business, but I just wanted to make the comment that there is so much racism, homophobia, sexual harassment, and even porn that I find almost zero use for the site now. I don't even promote my business on there. Another listener writes, my only real use for Twitter is to publicly thank or shame companies. Sometimes getting customer service attention is faster on Twitter than it is by phone or email. It sounds like it's effective for getting customer service from other companies, but as you were saying, Sarah Fryer, that folks have had a hard time getting customer service specifically from Twitter about the platform. Jay in Pleasanton, good morning.
Hello, good morning. I like Twitter. I know they're not perfect, but I think they have huge potential, but what confuses me about Twitter is that, as far as I know, their CEO is the CEO of two companies. So how could they be innovative with a CEO who is only half there?
Jay, thanks. You know, Jack Dorsey, the CEO of both Twitter and Square, has endured some criticism for being the head of two companies at once. Sarah Fryer, is that deserved?
I think that there's a lot to be said about how difficult it must be to do that. Just, you know, if he goes to an event and he's going on behalf of Square, but then he also gets invited to the Twitter events. And the same thing happens with, you know, recruiting. If he's recruiting somebody, how does he decide if they're being recruited for Square or Twitter? It's a huge issue with investors, too. When I talk to some of Twitter's biggest investors, they wonder, like, how long is this sustainable? But you know, Twitter's board went through a multi-month search. They talked to so many candidates for the job and decided that despite all that, that they thought that Jack was the person who could do this for Twitter. The reason, I think, is because there's this sort of myth in Silicon Valley, or maybe it's true, that the founder is the person who has the moral authority to really bring the vision to the forefront for the company, for the future, right? Zuckerberg runs Facebook. He's run Facebook really well. The idea is that, you know, if you have a company where there's a lot of internal indecision, as we talked about, at least you can have a very visionary leader. Now, really, kind of hasn't worked out that way based on what we've heard internally. Jack Dorsey has been very good at delegating things, but he's not really the fierce commander that maybe people thought he might be.
Is he also in favor of keeping Twitter independent?
Oh, I, I think so, more so than the acquisition. Yeah, yeah, I think so. He's maybe been a little bit more convinced after this process, if, according to some reports. But I think that for him, he wants to be the one to turn this around. And if he doesn't, there is no plan B.
We're talking with Sarah Fryer, tech reporter at Bloomberg News, and Alex Kantrowitz, senior technology reporter for BuzzFeed News. And we're talking with you, our listeners, and I'd like to go next to Charles in Berkeley. Hi, Charles.
Hi there. So, I've been thinking about it, and actually I think I probably used Twitter way back whenever it first came onto the Internet. In its very earliest days. And it really hasn't changed a whole lot. And to me, it's always seemed like a technology in search of a mission. And I don't know that it's found a mission. And I most recently, whenever I was looking at the sort of tweet stream about whether or not, the Russians had gotten a hold of the WikiLeaks material before WikiLeaks released it, I thought, what is this telling me? We kind of knew this was where it was going, and I was trying to figure out what the added value was. And I think I feel very stuck with Twitter all the time, not knowing quite what function it's going to serve in the realm of cybersphere communication. And it just really is frustrating to me. I like the option of being able to communicate with people one-to-one. But that's good, and you do get some quick response. But it just always feels very frustrating.
Well, Charles, thanks for weighing in. Alex Kantrowitz, who are Twitter's biggest competitors? This type of experience that Charles is describing feels like an opening for other companies.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. So I think there's two different types of competitors that Twitter has. One is economic competitors, and the other is attention competitors. Let's start with economic competitors. That is clearly Google and Facebook. Brian Nowak from Morgan Stanley Securities says 85% of all incremental dollars spent in digital advertising go to those two companies. So basically what Twitter's left with is, trying to vie for that 15%. So those are its clear competitors economically. I think the more important question is the attention, the competitors for attention. So I think there's two different types of people in this world. One is a type of person who wants to find out what's happening in the news as it's happening. And they are okay with a little bit of uncertainty because they just need to know. And so I think that's the type of person that Twitter is great for. They follow their streams obsessively. They know that they're going to get some stuff that isn't 100% accurate in there, but that's okay. It's worth the cost. And they just want to know first. They want to know as it's happening. They're anxious, and Twitter is for them. The other type of people are those who want conclusive information and they want it comprehensive. And so if you're trying to figure out, a situation with whether Russia had the WikiLeaks information or not, and you want to know conclusively and you don't need to know at the moment, then you're that other type of person. And for you, I would recommend going to any number of news sources that will get the authoritative story probably an hour or two later. I recommend BuzzFeed News. It's a good place to go and find out information about this topic. And if you read the article, you're freed from the chaos of the Twitter stream. And that's why I think a lot of people don't go to Twitter, because they'd prefer that second option, which is fine.
Well, Chris writes, "Dear guy on at KQED forum," so referring to you, Alex Kantrowitz, "so if I don't want to see certain words, I need to meticulously maintain and update a list of those words? Absurd."
It might be absurd, but then, the converse is thinking that if you don't want to do it yourself, you're putting the power in the hands of somebody else. And so I think that's the question. There's one way to look at this, which is to wish away all the bad in the world. Well, guess what, buddy? That's not just going to go away. If you want it to be restrained, it has to happen in one of two ways on Twitter. One is Twitter does it for you, and the other is you do it for yourself, assuming they can build the tools. And as somebody who distrusts allowing a central organization to decide what you can see and what you can't see, for me, it might be a little absurd, but I'd rather have control than give it to somebody else.
Kevin finds the mute function effective. He tweets, "Both the Twitter platform and many tweeting apps already offer the mute function. I use it successfully every day." I think we can fit in one last call. Ben in Los Gatos, if you could keep it brief, what's your thought?
Yeah, sure. Above all, Twitter's a business, okay? And you know, it's valued at six times the value of New York Times today.
I think I saw it exceeds $11 billion or something like that.
It's $11.8 billion market cap. And it's still an amazing company, but we're thinking back to two and a half years ago, Twitter was valued at almost $47 billion, which is really outrageous. And remember, it lost $500 million in the past 12 months. So with a loss of $500 million compared to the New York Times with the value of $1.8 billion and a profit of $62 million for the year, we have to look at it and say it's a business. Well,
Ben, thanks. I think you're right. And so, Sarah Fryer, last thought, what's the best case scenario for Twitter right now?
The best case scenario is one of the two things I mentioned. Either they get bought by somebody who can help them, you know, enhance what they do, or they figure it out on their own and they capitalize on the potential that people have been talking about for so long.
Well, Sarah Fryer, tech reporter at Bloomberg News, thanks so much for talking with us this morning.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, Alex Kantrowitz, senior technology reporter with BuzzFeed News.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks also to Vivian Schiller, former head of global news at Twitter, who joined us earlier in the program. And thanks for your tweets, comments, questions, phone calls. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. And our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Joanne Wallace is our executive producer. I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.